Good morning and welcome to How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So our assignment from yesterday, how do you hear difficult information most openly? Record and listen. Here's our first caller. Sherry, did I lose you?
No, I'm right here.
Okay. First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. This is Kate from Australia.
Hello, Kate.
I quickly went to go do the assignment right before the call, and I guess I did today's with the time zones. I was 2 days behind. I thought I was 2 days behind. I guess I was only 1 day behind. So let me just take a second, and as I was listening to Ashwini read the assignment out loud.
Yes. How do you receive difficult information most easily? How does it need to be presented? Would that be a...
Yeah, I think what drops in, or what's coming up for me is... that I need to feel that the person delivering the information, I guess I took it in the direction of kind of criticism, or not criticism, but, you know, constructive feedback, but maybe that feels difficult to hear. But if I feel that the person delivering it has respect for me, or values me. So if it's someone at work who I think really values my input into the process and needs to tell me, you know, you're not performing the way that you need to be right now, and like this part wasn't very good, or if it's a close friend that it needs to tell me, you know, the way that you reacted in that situation is really hurtful. If it's someone that is, I feel like, knows that I love them and would do anything for them, or a colleague that knows, would think that my work is quite good, I think it's much easier for me to take information versus someone I feel a little bit insecure around, who my immediate reaction is, no, I didn't mean to be hurtful when I said it that way. What I was trying to say was, like, I get really defensive and try and explain it away.
So when you feel safe, could we say it that way? When you feel safe, you could. It sounds like you're pretty much open to anything.
Yeah.
But if you sense that there's an undercurrent of, maybe we could say an undercurrent of more going on than this particular exchange.
Well, I think it's more of a projection that this other person. Whatever insecurity I might have, you know, I think one that's easy for me is I'm not smart enough. And I work at a university, and I'm a teacher at a university, and so it's a weird insecurity to have in that environment.
It's odd conclusion to reach.
It's very clear to me, and if someone knows my work, if they don't understand something I did, but I know they know my work, it's like, okay, you're not saying I'm not smart enough. You're saying you don't understand this thing. But when someone who I'm like, oh, you don't know my work and you don't understand what I'm saying, but wait, do you think I'm not smart enough? So that insecurity that I know that I have, that I know comes out, is much more prominent when I'm not safe, when I'm in a situation.
Yeah.
Where I'm hearing that kind of difficult information and what I'm projecting is unsafe. And they might just be saying, like, oh, no, you just, like, you know, it might not be saying but it's immediately
they might
where
be
I go.
Saying, I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with you not being smart enough. Right. Well, and that's, a couple of days ago, it seems like we had a little conversation similar to this where a specific lands on a universal. So if you don't understand what I wrote, that means you think I'm not smart enough. And that is a leap that only ego can make through projection, right? Because they actually don't have anything to do with each other.
Mm.
So I think it was not good enough was the other one. So if something this person does is not approved of, enjoyed, whatever it is, then the message is, you're not good enough. And of course, you know, when it's not us having the experience, it's very easy to see, well, actually, that works really well for ego, because anything other than just falling down in ecstatic praise can be interpreted by ego to fulfill its one of its more popular, its most popular rants.
Yeah. Yeah, and that it just came up so strongly this experience, maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, where I recalled something that my partner had said to me, and we worked together, and I had immediately gone into a meeting with a friend and said, you know, so-and-so just said this thing, and basically it means that I'm no good and I could never get this other position that we were talking about. And then I related that information, and he was so mad at me. He said, I never would have said that. I never would have said you couldn't do that. Like, that's just, I can't believe you would have heard that and then repeated it to one of our colleagues that I would say that about you. And what is, and I was completely defended. I was like, of course you said that. I wouldn't have then immediately gone and told another person how hurtful it was to me. But
I don't make these things up, you know.
Right, and it's not like I said it.
You completely made that up.
Exactly. And I'm sure that he said something in which in no way meant what I took it to mean, but is exactly what I heard. And it was just like this impasse. We just kind of parted ways over it, like didn't touch it again. But it's this very particular insecurity I have. So I'm willing to bet that conditioning is just looks for those opportunities where someone says something and it's like, well, that's exactly what they're saying. And the other person is sitting there going like,
what?
We were talking about the weather.
That's right. And, of course, this is a commercial for the communication book, if and when we ever get it out. Because what you're not able to do in the moment is say, are you telling me that I'm not smart enough to get that position? Mm-hmm. At which point, his mouth would fall open, right? And he would say, of course, that's not what I'm saying. And then you would go on to do a little reflecting back and forth and clarify what happened. But the way egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate has it set up, you heard it, he said it, you heard it, that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then what you're meant to do is go off and suffer and talk to your friends and be a victim to it, and isn't he awful, and why am I even in a relationship with him? When actually just a simple clarifying question would have ended the whole thing.
Mm.
That's why ego doesn't want you to ask that question.
Well, and the challenge of that, because it triggers this insecurity, so there's this defensive emotionalness immediately comes up. And in the second interaction when I said, oh, well, you said I would never be good enough to get that position, And he says, no, I never said that. Like, I would never say anything like that. The need for compassion for that suffering being in that moment, because what goes through my head then in defense is, well, did I do that? Why would I make that up to make myself suffer? Like, the only reason, like, I wouldn't mix up your words just to create this, like, really painful experience for myself. But the truth is, like, I didn't.
That's right. But ego would.
Right.
Second, at every possible opportunity. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's much to see in that, isn't there?
Yeah. 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 Thank you. Good thing that I didn't prepare, because who knows what would have come out.
Exactly. thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Gosho.
Go happy.
Thanks, Kate.
the process that I was watching in that, in terms of how ego operates, right, Cherry, is that it's told us about one thing that is wrong with me, and when we're identified with that me, that there's something wrong with, then it doesn't matter what anyone says, we are prone to that interpretation. And it's interesting to see that there are circumstances in which that identification doesn't operate and circumstances in which the identification does operate. And that's just interesting to watch.
Well, yes, it's critical to see.
That's right.
What you're saying is, if I'm identified with a certain aspect of ego, then that's the lens I'm going to see through. And everything is going to reflect that back to me, because
that's right.
That's who I am in that moment. If I'm not identified with that, then I wouldn't see it, even if somebody actually said it.
Yes. And something that I think it was a Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh quote, where we talk that everybody, the ego is a target, right? It's waiting to be wounded.
Yes. Yeah. Oh.
Right? It's the open wound that's waiting for the arrow to land in order to create that suffering. And that's our experience when we're identified with it. It's the place where no matter what anyone says or what anyone intended, even if they actually intended to let loose an arrow at you, then that place, that wound is available to be wounded again, I suppose, because that's what ego is. It's the wound of not enough.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, exactly. So that's the fastest way to be the center of the universe, and that's where ego wants to be. So we get confused, as Kate kind of pointed out, well, why would I want to do that? I don't want to suffer. No. No, we as authentic human beings don't want to suffer, but ego does. And we get confused when ego says, ego joins in with the, well, but I don't want to suffer. I don't want to feel bad. But ego does. It enjoys it. That's exactly where it wants to be and where it wants to live.
Well, and it's not my insecurity, right? That's really the crux of it. It is what ego is. Ego is insecurity. It's less than all that is. And so when I'm identified with it, I own that insecurity, but actually it's not my insecurity. It's not, because I have an experience of not having, of not feeling insecure when I'm not identified with it.
That's how we can tell it's not authentic.
That's right.
Because if it were really me, that it would be the case all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. All right. Here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Rebecca from the monastery.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey. That's a beautiful conversation and a really powerful exercise, because it seems that the whole country got some really difficult information yesterday. I don't know, I wasn't part of receiving that information, but I heard from several sources that there was something really big that happened in the country that was really hard to take, at least for a lot of people. And what I saw about that was that the way in which difficult information can be received most openly is when attention is on awareness. Because what was described in that last conversation, and then also in last night in group, and you know, and is that when there isn't a me that emerges when that difficult information comes in, you know, you and Ashwini were just talking about, and there's not a knee-jerk wound of something's wrong, and instead attention is just on awareness, it can register the difficulty or the disappointment or the fear or the whatever, but we don't become that, and therefore ego doesn't get to slurp all that energy up through that process of becoming the me that now has, you know, gets to revel in something's wrong.
Yes, yes, exactly so. With attention on awareness, what you're pointing at is there's no me to take anything personally, and so everything is clearly just whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And within that, even, I think, tell me if this is what you're pointing at. So I did something, and then I get information that it was hurtful to somebody. At that point, one of two things happens. Either I'm identified with ego, and then it's all about me. It doesn't matter that it was hurtful. I don't care. Now it's about me. And as Kate was saying, you know, I'll either defend myself or maybe I'll just plunge into a beating or whatever is going on with that. If I'm not identified, if attention is on awareness, there is a registering of the situation that could produce a response that we might label as disappointing or sad or whatever. Not because I did something to somebody else, but because there's a situation in which someone is feeling pain.
Yes.
It's all the same thing, but it's very impersonal, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And so we can go about our day, you know, our whatever, our work, our business, with the one that, one may not be the right word, but, you know, the disappointment, let's just say. We can go along our day with the disappointment or the pain or the whatever, but we're doing it in the field of awareness, and so it transforms it utterly in that reality. Whereas,
yes, and go ahead. I just didn't want to lose that one. But go ahead, finish that thought.
Oh, well, I think I've already lost it, so you go ahead.
Okay. Well, what I was responding to is we go around through the day with that. And I would suggest that we won't. That in not taking any of it personally, in that presence, there is the clarity. So if I did something and that was hurtful to somebody, if I don't feel bad, if I don't make it about me, there's no guilt, there's just the understanding of what happened. In that clarity, the whole thing dissolves. So there actually isn't anything to carry around through the day.
Let me ask this question this way. So is there a person at the bottom of the well really even to be with then? You know what I mean? Because where I was going with is if I'm with the pain or the disappointment or whatever, I'm with the person at the bottom of the well in awareness.
Yeah, I wouldn't combine those two.
Okay. It's a totally different, totally different kind
of
teaching.
Well, it's just such an open doorway for ego to walk through.
Uh-huh.
To me, it's one of those places that will, whatever is going on will be revealed in the clarity that we were just talking about, but we don't want to pursue something and try to figure it out. Because as soon as we pursue it and try to figure it out, we know what land we have slipped into.
What's at play here, yeah. So it really it kind of boils down to just, to me, what's coming up now, is it just boils down to trust. Do we trust life or not? You know, we trust life or not.
Exactly. Yes. And are you taking it personally or not? Are you pursuing enlightenment? Are you pursuing awakening? Or are you trying to be right?
That's the other thing. Thank you for that. That's the other big thing that dropped in when I was doing this exercise for myself yesterday in the book was as long as I'm focused on my true north, that's everything. You know, so in my true north, by that I mean everything is designed for and is unfolding perfectly for my awakening. That's my
yes.
true north.
And
so
yes.
if I'm in the, well, you know, I'm not going to take this personally because that would then mean there's a person to take, and that's not my true north. That's not what I'm going for.
Yes.
And that in a sense addresses it all.
Yes, and there's a fun piece of that you'll appreciate as you look through your exercise that you did. You can take out all the pronouns.
Oh.
Right? True north is not my true north.
Yeah, oh, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
thank
keep having
you.
Fun. Thanks,
I
Rebecca.
Will.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Rebecca. What I was seeing there, Sherry, is that place where if attention is on awareness, then what happens when there's something within quotes painful or challenging is that awareness does not collapse. And
yes.
so that's why you can hold it, right? Because it
yes.
doesn't obliterate into what that means about me from the perspective of my opinion, my feelings, my, it doesn't,
sense
so
of myself.
As soon as we, yes, and so we have that ability to hold, we were looking at it in group yesterday, contradictions as if, because that's how life is. There's the beautiful uh-huh. sky and the birds and the flowers and this painful thing and the wonderful campaign in Africa. They're all there as they are, rather than when something painful happens, all of that disappears and I'm uh-huh. The awareness has collapsed to me.
Yes, and how
that,
I'm
that's
suffering
when
or what I've done wrong.
Mm-hmm. Or how painful this is, or how
mm-hmm.
how I can't tolerate it, or it's a
mm-hmm.
position that I have to defend, or whatever it is, right? There's a that
mm-hmm.
that to me is what I was seeing. That it's really what the Buddha taught, which is ignorance is the root cause of suffering, and ignorance implies a collapsed awareness which cannot hold all of how life is.
Yes, yes, we ignore what is in order to focus on me.
That's right.
And to me, the simplest turnabout with that is what we were just talking about. Are you interested in learning? Are you interested in seeing what is? Or do you want to be right so that you don't get your feelings hurt or so that you don't get upset?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
the, you know, if we're learning, then even the most painful experience, if we're present for it, and we see something out of it, we're grateful for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In fact, the struggle shapes us, right? The
yes.
struggle to be with it, to let go of what is preventing us from being with it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, I think we have time for one more caller, Sherry. So here we go. Next caller, you're
All
now
right.
live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, Shwani and Sherry. It's Sherry in San Francisco.
Hello, Sherry.
Hello. Wow, this has been so powerful, such so much in this call today. And for me, what I've been looking at the last couple days is actually something, I can't remember when this conversation happened, but it was sort of like the bigger how of this retreat, which is, you know, just in general, like watching who's responding to these questions and how, you know, how they're being responded to.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said something that has really stuck with me, which was that there can sometimes be that tendency for the quote unquote right answer to come up right away. Like,
mm-hmm.
oh, here's the
mm-hmm.
here's the loving, compassionate from center response.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that lovely? But the you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the guidance I can't remember whose it was, but the guidance was to actually you know, let that conditioned response come up and use that for the two-handed recording to you know, to really, to see what's there. And I just wanted to kind of say how profound that has been for me, because I've seen it not just in the ways of responding to these, but actually in general. Like, I've been noticing how often in my days there's that kind of jump to the right way to be, the right compassionate, loving, expansive, you know, like,
yeah.
That's the way to be, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Sherry, that is actually, as I think you know, why we came up with the two-handed recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what was happening to people. So I'm upset about something. I pick up the recorder, and conditioning is right there with the right answer. Well, you just need to embrace that and,
right,
and turn attention to, okay, all better. And nothing
yep.
has happened except conditioning is now my spiritual guide rather than just simply my guide through life, which is it has always been. Now it's got this spiritual overlay. And so with that two-handed recording, we're really attempting to get to, okay, and it doesn't mean it isn't the right answer. Because conditioning can
right.
help with the right answer. It learns the lingo of practice. But we heard, I think it was yesterday from Sarah, a story of a falling for that calm, quiet, wise
yes.
voice guiding us in practice, right? As it guides us right down the old primrose path. And so what you're pointing at is really important. That okay, yeah, that is the right answer. Is that all there is? Is there something
right.
else? Is there more underneath that?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and it has been so powerful because, and this was a long time ago. I mean, I think now, you know, there's that expression, the person at the bottom of the well, or a long time ago we used to say, you know, sort of shutting someone away in the closet. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, nope, mm-hmm. you don't fit in. You're not joyful, expansive, go happy kind of person. You know,
right.
go there in the closet.
Right.
Right. And I
finally,
I really
finally, we have a way to deal with all of these unacceptable parts of us. Right. Now we have a spiritual way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm so grateful because these. You know, these conversations, and of course, as we're often saying, you know, you never know who's going to say what on these calls, when, that's just going to be exactly the thing, and that's, it's just been so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that is, I can't remember how you phrased it when you first started out, but it's like the how and the how, kind of the lowercase how and the uppercase
yes.
how, right, because there are so many, we're seeing so many layers of conditioning, our relationship with conditioning, what conditioning does about conditioning, how we react to what conditioning does about conditioning, what the, you know, it's just stepping back and stepping back and stepping back. If we'll stay with it, if we won't just, as you're pointing at, if we don't just accept the first answer that comes to us, even when the first answer that comes to us sounds really, really good, you know, like
right,
the one that
right.
we really like to stay with.
Exactly. Yes. I'm so deeply grateful. Thank you.
No, me too. Me too. We are so lucky.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Sherry.
Deep gusho.
Thank gusho to you.
Thanks, Sherry. The thing that was dropping in, Sherry, just as we come to the end of the show, is what we get to see is that the right answer, within quotes, is just the ego's idea, right? That
mm-hmm.
kind, compassionate, joyful, happy is not. It's what we've been looking at all along. That's just an idea. It may not be an appropriate experience of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. to be able to stay with not going with that first idea allows us to experience all that is
rather than mm-hmm. just a particular response of how to be all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. and as Sherry was indicating, it's so seductive.
Yeah.
Because when we find out how to have the right answer, how to be the right person, it's very tempting. It's the reason that we moved away from that. We'll just turn your attention to the unconditional.
Yes.
You know, no matter what's yeah. going on, just turn your attention to the unconditional. Well, that's great if it's what we were talking about a little bit ago of attention on awareness.
Yes.
If that's what
exactly.
we're talking about with turning attention to the unconditional, absolutely, let's all do that, because that is an expansiveness that contains everything and allows everything to be as it is. But mm-hmm. if it's just turn attention away from what's going on in the old drop them down the well or throw them in the closet, that is not what we're going for in practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, and we have a weekend of assignments ahead of us. And today's assignment is, imagine the Valentine you would like to receive. Draw the Valentine. Employ colors, paste, glitter, ribbon, flowers, chocolate, etc., if you like. Record and listen.
Wow. And here we are at the end of September getting a Valentine.
I know. I know. Isn't that lovely?
It is. It's very good. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody. And have a lovely weekend. And good Lord, will and creek don't rise. See you on Monday.
Talk then. Thanks, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.